coming up on this episode of Inside Pop.
The battle over the way Netflix releases movies intensifies, and two Oscar contenders may be caught in the crossfire.
Plus, we discuss whether we prefer seeing movies on the big screen or in the comfort of our own homes.
All of that and a thought-provoking big sell. It's all happening right now on Inside Pop.
Hey, y'all. I'm Amita Patel.
And I'm Sean David Johnson. And this is Inside Pop. We are your deep dive inside the world of pop culture.
Listen up, Spotify users. You can now find Inside Pop on Spotify. You know how much we love Spotify. And now you can listen to our podcast there. Search Inside Pop under podcasts. Listen and follow us, and you can never miss an episode.
Yeah, listen to your workout playlist, and then listen to your "This is the playlist I listen to when I go shopping" and the grocery store playlist, and then listen to us.
Thanks in advance.
Thank you. So, well, I want to get right into our main story of the week, which I find really interesting, Amita. So basically, Netflix back in the news because they have, well, they've always created feature-length films, right? We've talked a lot about The Beast of No Nation when it came out a couple of years ago. Mudbound came out last year. So Netflix makes a ton of movies. They make rom-coms. They make horror films. But they also make Oscar contenders. Mm-hmm. And this year, they have, I think especially, Alfonso Cuarón's movie, Roma, which Netflix bought earlier this year, and they bought it for distribution. And everyone who sees this film immediately says, this is an amazing film, one of the best films of the year, an Oscar contender. The problem is that Netflix's release model, they only release movies in theaters the same day they release them on Netflix. So a lot of people don't like that. The Cannes Film Festival, for example, did not include Roma because they don't think that a movie that's released on quote-unquote television is actually a movie that should be screened at the Cannes Film Festival. So all of this to say that for the very first time, Netflix, which is this behemoth, right? Whatever they want, they get, they do. They've got $8 billion every year to create content. Netflix is actually considering releasing Alfonso Cuarón's new film, Roma, in theaters before it airs on Netflix in the hopes that the movie might be taken more seriously. The movie might get seen by more people who have this traditional view of what movies are and should be, and the movie might have a better chance at winning an Oscar. So that's what we want to talk about. The new media, right? Like it's movies, but it's on TV and they're being seen at the same time. It's all confusing, but it's also a really exciting time because I feel like things are changing on a daily basis. So Amita and I want to tackle all of this. And Amita, I want to start by just asking you just to look back a little bit. We've talked again about how much we've loved Beasts of No Nation. We've talked about Mudbound last year. Do you think the fact that those movies were released on Netflix hurt their chances at being taken seriously as Oscar contenders?
I thank you for this question. I think it definitely hurt Beasts of No Nation because I think it was still really new. What is that? No, 3 years ago when that came out. And I think it was still a real, real foreign concept to put to theatrically release the film the same day it comes out on Netflix. And so I think, and we've discussed on this podcast, one of our very first episodes, how we thought it was phenomenally done. And then we felt like it was robbed when it came to the Oscars. I do think maybe the needle is starting to edge towards a little more acceptance because Mudbound is a perfect example of that. They got 4 Oscar nominations last year. There was a little recognition with that film. And I feel like it's just something, I think the concept is new and it's now becoming slowly accepted. And so it's just baby steps, right? So I think maybe Roma with Alfonso Cuarón, Oscar winning director of Gravity, like I think he, has, he's going to raise, you know, some eyebrows, and that's fine. But he will also get people to watch because of his reputation. And I think that's going to, again, help that needle go a little bit further towards a little more acceptance.
Yeah, I think he's, from what I've read, he's actually putting pressure on Netflix. So he, and I should mention, I've heard that the Coen brothers, who created this film called The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, which people are also saying is great, and I think they also want to be considered for Oscar and PGA and Golden Globe nominations, DGA. And I think both of those directors are pressuring Netflix and saying, what do you have to lose? Can you just release our films a week before they're seen on Netflix? You know, and listen, you're a Netflix executive and you've got an, you know, Academy Award winning directors saying, why not do this? We're in business with you. Do you want us to be in business with you next year and 2 years from now? Then just give us this one thing. So,
right.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't know the economics of it all, but my guess is if Roma was released, and, you know, it's always that phrase, in select cities, which means in the United States, New York, Chicago, LA, maybe Atlanta, you know, maybe Philly, maybe St. Louis, maybe, but, you know, Dallas, maybe. But let's say the six major cities. What if Netflix started out with baby steps and said, okay, a week before it airs on Netflix, we will play this movie in select theaters in some major cities?
I think that it would help further. And I think that's could be another baby step in the right direction. I think right now they're still working with the formula they have right now. It's the same day. And they're trying to use the clout that these directors have and obviously the muscle of their PR and publicity people to hopefully get people like us to talk about it and hopefully get people to really like take notice. And, you know, what's interesting about Roma, to get a little more specific, is that it's a Spanish language drama and it's black and white. So it's already a little bit of a niche here that in a way, I don't know, I feel like Netflix gives it more eyeballs, frankly, because so many people are on Netflix for so many different types of programming and shows and TV and films. So I think it's a great move to do it. It's just, will the Academy finally just shake it off and say, you know what, this is a fantastic film. It needs to be recognized.
Yeah, and it's that balance of it. I think you made a great point, which is, you know, will Roma be seen by more people because it's on Netflix and not just playing in theaters? Definitely yes. But I also think because it's a foreign language, because it's in black and white, because I think it has really quiet, intimate moments, you know, are people going to experience it and enjoy it in the same way they would if they could only see it in theaters? So I feel like it's catch as catch can. I do think, and maybe that's one thing that we have to admit, Amita, is that we're not typical moviegoers in many ways.
Yes, definitely, you know, definitely.
I say this without any sense of snobbery, but I think that, you know, a lot of people go to the movies for entertainment. Me too. You too.
Yeah.
But I think we also go to the movies for elevation, for like to be awakened, to be touched, to be moved, to be challenged. And yeah, I mean, not everyone needs the movies to do that. And so, I mean, Moonlight, for example. Sorry if I'm going off on a tangent. I'll just say that Moonlight, I think, is historic for being one of the Oscar winners that has made the least amount of money. Most people did not see Moonlight. Moonlight did not make a lot of money.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, I don't think that The Shape of Water, which won Best Picture last year, also made a lot of money.
Right. Great films, but didn't make a lot of money. So I think there's definitely, I definitely see Netflix's strategy wanting to have exclusive content and to not give in to the movie complexes and to the feature films. But I definitely see if you're Alfonso Cuarón, you created what a lot of people are considering a work of art. You want them to see it on a big screen, and then you want that recognition that all those awards bring.
Yeah, you know, he said, I read an article that he discussed this in, and he says, you know, he's grateful for Netflix because the fact that this film exists and is being able to be seen, you know, is because of Netflix. And he says, you know, it's important that the two things exist and not clash. It's a question of finding something that works. Mm-hmm. You know, he admits, like, this is, you know, a film that is going to have difficulty finding space to be shown. And so, therefore, it's important for a place like Netflix to provide that space.
Yeah, yeah. Really good point by that phenomenal filmmaker. So, it'll be interesting to see. So, no one has made any announcements firmly as of yet. But as soon as that happens, it'll be breaking news. We'll interrupt your podcast feed and let you know what happened. But, before we go into our next segment, do you want to make any predictions? What do you predict is going to happen, Amita?
For if they would get awards recognition?
Or, no, what do you think Netflix is going to do? What's your prediction?
Oh, do you think they're going to release it a little bit earlier?
Mm-hmm.
You know, hopefully they're listening to this podcast and take a gentle nudge and say, you know what, maybe we'll try it with this one film. Let's test the waters and let's do what, you know, the esteemed Sean David Johnson said and at least put it out a week beforehand. It's the least we could do for them because they watch everything that we put out.
If only the world operated that way. From your lips to God, a.k.a. the president of Netflix's ears.
Yeah. it would be great, and I think no matter what, it's a good thing to just, again, get more eyeballs to see the films, you know. And I think it's a segue to the conversation that we had where, you know, I have wrestled with seeing a film in a theater versus seeing it at home. And when I've started to draw a line of, like, what qualifies.
So now we're going to flip it and reverse it, as Miss Demeanor Elliot sometimes says. So you've heard us on this podcast talk a lot about films that we've seen possibly at PGA screenings, possibly just like regular people in movie theaters. And we're like, please see this on a big screen. Regular. It's amazing. And we are big proponents for seeing films as they were made to be seen on the big screen. But Amita sent me a message earlier this week, and she said that she really wanted to actually talk about her belief that there are actually some films, new films made for theatrical release, that you should actually see on the small screen. So, Amita, I would love to ask you what inspired this thought of yours. Blasphemy.
I know. And it's weird. It feels unnatural to say this, you know, like, we come from TV and it takes a village and then some to put on television shows. And it's like times 10 sometimes for a film. You know, it takes a lot of people to put together a film, and it's a huge deal to get it into a theater. And I respect that and respect the process and respect the work that people put into it. And it's amazing that it can go into a theater and people go to see it. That being said, you know, I was at dinner with some of my cousins and her friends the other day, and people were talking about the new film Disobedience, starring Rachel Weisz and Rachel McAdams and Alessandro Nivola. And it is this smaller film about the Ashkenazi Jewish community and these two old friends who reconnect and have a lesbian affair. And it is definitely a taboo thing. It is an interesting film. It is an interesting story. And the people at dinner were just like, I really want to see that film. And many people have said that in the last couple of weeks. I really want to see it. I got to go see it this weekend. And I do love when there is, like, momentum like that for something, for a smaller film, and people really want to see it when it's come out. And we want to be part of the conversation of a film that is buzzworthy. I love that, and I want to participate in that. But when I was at dinner, they were like, do you think I should go see it? And I was like, it was such an interesting film. I really, made you think about a different group of people that you don't really see. Do I think you need to run to the theater to see it? I'm going to say save your money. And that's kind of the crux of this little diatribe of mine. It is not cheap to see a film these days. And therefore, I have slowly become a little more selective about what I'm putting my money behind to go to a theater and have that theatrical experience. I hate to say it, and I don't want to take any people out of the seats for films that are smaller. But in my opinion, something like Disobedience can be enjoyed and consumed on your television, and you don't need to go to a theater to see it.
Amita, don't apologize. There are film critics who every day have to say, this movie is not good. Don't go see it. It's not worth your money. And you're not saying something that strong.
Well, no,
so shouldn't.
I'm not saying that.
Right, no,
that,
you're not
though.
Saying that. But so yes, but don't, yeah. So don't apologize for believing that. I think, you know, it's funny because when you said you want to talk about that, I had zero interest in seeing Disobedience for free and probably won't see it on the small screen either. But I think the reason for that is just because, and we've said this a gazillion times, there's so much amazing content. I hate that word content, but there's so much amazing TV and film that's produced every month that I don't know that I'm more selective, I think. And so, but I'm going to agree with you that there are some films that you should wait, that you can wait to see. And what I'm going to do is try to piggyback on what you're going to say. And I came up with a couple of reasons why watching something on a smaller screen can be just as satisfying. So my first reason is you have complete control. If you decide to, and here, I'll take an extreme example, Avengers Infinity War. You should see that in a giant screen with big Dolby surround sound. But let's say you can't afford that, right? Movies are expensive. If you can see it in your own home and you have a flat screen, maybe you have complete control over that experience. You can turn off your phone. You can draw the shades. And then you can immerse yourself. You don't have someone's head in front of you. You don't have someone potentially talking. You don't have, right? Like, so I think one advantage of the small screen is you have complete control. And even if you're watching something on your phone, and I don't do that very often, but think about it this way. I'm holding up my iPhone right now, and it's probably 8 inches away from my head. That's immersion. When you go to a movie theater, you're 80 feet away from the screen, right? It's a much bigger screen. But I think just – so what I'm trying to say is aesthetically, I think there are ways to make up for that beautiful immersive experience that a theatrical screening can give you.
Yeah. I will contend about the iPhone thing. I am not somebody who likes to watch films on my iPhone – or I don't have an iPhone, on my phone, on my cell phone, or even on an iPad. I cringe at sometimes doing that. If I have to, I will. And my laptop the same. I really will watch a film on my television instead of any of those things. It's just, I think that's the purist in me that, like, okay, if I can't see it on a big screen in a theater, then at least I'm just going to get the closest thing, which is the TV in my house. I'm not going to go six times smaller on a phone or a laptop. But yes, I get what you're saying. Like the immersive experience of being in a theater versus the control you have of your environment in your own home can be nice. It can definitely be nice to be able to just curl up and, you know, make your own popcorn and other snacks and not pay $20 for those either.
So I have a question. I think I know what you're going to say, but let's see. You've surprised me before. So the Spielberg-directed, Streep-starring, Hank-starring, politically important, gravitas-filled film, The Post. that's a film that I didn't see, and it kind of broke my streak of seeing all Oscar-nominated films. I just didn't get around to that, even though I had a PGA DVD screener. Is that a film that you saw in the movie theater?
I did.
Is that
I did. I went to a screening of it.
Okay. And is that a film that... So talk to me about that film. Is that a film that you would also say you must see it in the theater? Or is that a film where you'd say, no, it's fine to see that on a smaller screen?
This is funny because I had some examples of these things ready for this part of the conversation and we didn't talk about it. Yeah, I would say that's okay to see in the comfort of your home. Along with a film like Lady Bird. I don't think that it was necessarily, unlike other Spielberg films, there are a lot of other Spielberg films that are definitely worth a large screen. I don't know if this one necessarily needed to be consumed on a huge theater screen. I think it's based in a newsroom and in homes. And, you know, I don't think that the large screen aspect of it enhanced the experience, in my opinion.
Okay, interesting. And you said Lady Bird as well.
Same for Lady Bird. You know, I went back to last year's Oscar-nominated films, a film like Fences and Manchester by the Sea. Also, did you have to see it on a large screen? I don't think so.
Fences was tricky because it was based on a play, and you really felt that, right?
Yeah.
So talky, amazing performances, but so dialogue-heavy. And not very visual. I mean, listen, the director did a good job and there were beautiful visual moments. But I agree. I think I could have enjoyed it just as much if I had seen it for the first time at home.
Yes. It's more of, maybe it's the story of the film or just kind of the way that you need to see something that has larger feeling to it, you know, I can't think of it. You know, Lion, one of my favorite films a couple of years ago, had this largeness to it. You know, obviously these sweeping scenes, you know, in India obviously led to it to be really well experienced on a big screen. I don't know if I would feel as emotionally enveloped in that film if I saw it on the small screen.
Okay, interesting. I know that one... And there's also just the idea that you don't get, if you think about classic films that you want to go back and watch, there are so few revival houses now, sadly, that actually just, was it last night, Chris and I were channel surfing and, oh my God, this amazing, amazing film called The Swimmer was on Turner Movie Classics. It stars Burt Lancaster, and it's based on this freaking weird short story by not John Cheever, one of those 60s short story male short story writers. But it's basically about this guy in the 60s who lives in this upper crust neighborhood in Connecticut, and he's out and about, and he decides. So he's maybe 7 miles from his home, and he basically decides to swim home, but through the pools of his neighbors. So it's such a weird story and such a weird but amazing film. So it's Burt Lancaster, you know, walking into a neighbor's yard. You know, they chat, they interact. He's like, "All right, I'm swimming home," and they're like, "What are you doing?" And he jumps in their pool, he swims, jumps out. But it's really these snapshots of kind of waspy, wealthy life. But then you also see, and this is all I'll say about it, I don't want to spoil it, something's obviously not right with him, and you start to get little clues of, well, wait, what's wrong with him, and why are people reacting to him in this way, and why do they raise their eyebrow when he mentions a certain family member, and wait, where are you going? It's really a beautiful film. All of that to say, go see The Swimmer, but... I've only seen this film on the small screen. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. It's like this beautiful, like that, you know, that like 1960s color that they get. And so it's that beautiful color. It's so vibrant. I've only seen it on a small film, and I love, 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 love that movie so much. I may never see it on the big screen, right? So that's a movie that I've been completely immersed in and have never had the big screen experience.
I want to see that film now, and it makes me want to open a revival house.
Yeah.
Because there needs to be a place for films like this. There needs to be somebody that still values the way movies were made in the 50s and 60s and be able to share that with the younger generation. And yeah, okay. Anybody want to go in on a revival theater? Tweet us.
Oh, God. And see, this is a tangent. Okay, this is another segment, perhaps. But I do remember when I was, sweet, sweet Sean. You were so nerdy, yet full of, your eyes were full of wonder. But I remember I was about 16, and there was a revival house in New York City, and they had a Hitchcock, like, three-week-long festival. And I was going every day after high school, and so I saw The Birds and Vertigo and Rear Window and Strangers on a Train, and spent all of my, you know, like, I had no money for comic books that month. But I spent all of my money, and it was like, I mean, that's why I became a Hitchcock fan, because I saw all of that stuff on the big screen, and it was, it was way more exciting than seeing it, you know, on Channel 5 with commercials. So, so I guess we're saying no hard and fast rules. There's pros to both, right? I feel like this is a big deal for me, and maybe for you, for this podcast, because we are saying that there's no, like, we're kind of pulling back on that hard and fast rule of you must see stuff on the big screen.
Yeah, it is. It is. It was definitely something that I knew might be a little controversial, but it's something that I have been feeling for a little while. And I think I would, you know, it's a perfect example. I'd rather save my money on a film that is something that could be seen on my television and spend it going to Film Forum or Quad Cinema, which are two smaller theaters in the city that do play older films, to see one of those older films on a big screen.
Amen. Amen. What an illuminating conversation we had, Amita.
It was. I was extremely, like, in the moment about it.
Yeah. No, it was good. I enjoyed that conversation. And I love when I change my mind about things. I think it's, if only everyone in the world was okay saying, oh, I actually feel something differently now. I've thought about it, and now I feel differently. Because, you know what? A year ago, I think I would have been very, like, I don't, like, it's sacrilege to see anything on the small screen. But I thought about it, and I was like, yeah, like, there are definitely advantages to seeing stuff on the small screen. Another example, you know, I love horror movies. The other night, Chris and I don't know why it escaped me, but I've been desperate to see The Conjuring 2. For years, and it was a Friday night, and Chris is like, what do you want to watch? And I was like, I want to watch The Conjuring 2. And horror movies are fun to see on the big screen, but there was something so fun about turning off all the lights and not worrying about someone talking behind me. You know how I feel.
Mm-hmm.
But just like turning off the lights and being alone in your house and being scared to death. FYI, The Conjuring 2, so good and scary, so well done, so well directed. Shout out to The Conjuring 2. That nun is scary.
I had no idea this conversation would give a shout out to The Conjuring 2, guys.
It's so good. It's such high quality. I liked changing my mind about something. That was my favorite part of the conversation.
It's one of those things where I feel like we are now... everything is available at our fingertips, and we are choosing when and where we want to watch things, be it on a big screen at a movie theater, on a television screen in our homes, on a laptop at the airport, or even on our phones on a train. It happens. I still am going to be in the category of trying not to watch films on my laptop or my phone unless it's on a flight. Then I will allow it. But, you know, I lean towards having a decent screen on my television and in my films just to watch Watch things as they were meant to hopefully be shot, you know?
I agree. Respect the filmmakers, respect the work that they put in. And I'm going to say, like, respect your time. You know, like, you're going to devote 2 hours to something.
Yeah.
Make that experience as good as possible. So, we solved it.
Done.
As
you're
usual.
Welcome.
As usual. Okay, so more brilliance and solutions of all your pop culture woes coming up after these two very short messages.
I'm Bailiff Jesse Thorne, and justice is within your reach.
My mom refuses to take my phone calls.
My boyfriend says I should take our cats with me to graduate school, but I think he should keep them.
In the court of Judge John Hodgman, justice rules. My partner's board game collection is out of control.
My sister won't stop stealing my clothes.
I'm Judge John Hodgman. I'm tough, but fair.
Fair.
I'll bring you justice, and I'm only a click away.
Tipping, automotive etiquette, siblings, roommates. If you've got a case, go to MaximumFun.org/JJHO. Judge John Hodgman is tough, but fair.
Tough, but fair.
Subscribe to the podcast today.
Judge John Hodgman rules. That is all.
Hello, I'm Oliver Wong, DJ, scholar, and journalist.
And I'm Morgan Rhodes, music supervisor and stiletto devotee. And we host Heat Rocks, a podcast where we invite our favorite musicians, writers, and scholars to talk about the albums that have changed their lives.
Morgan, what exactly is a heat rock?
It's a record that's like hot fire, combustible.
Basically, just a really, really good album.
We've taken a deep dive into Nigerian funk from the 70s.
He kind of had like a bad reputation in town as just being like a sketchy dude. And he was just making music that for thousands of miles around him, he was the only person doing anything like that.
1980s teen comedy soundtracks.
This soundtrack always felt the same to me as like when I would find a great blazer at a thrift store that I could, and I was like, oh, this is going to be me now.
We've talked about Prince, Boys to Men, Kendrick Lamar, and everything in between. Heat Rocks, every Thursday here on Maximum Fun.
Welcome back to Inside Pop.
And now it's time for The Big Sell. It's our absolute favorite final segment of our show. Every week, we take turns. One of us recommends something from the world of pop culture to the other, and then we return in the next episode and rate that big sell. I was honored to receive an amazing big sell from Amita last week. The actress, and shall we call her activist, Jamila Jamil?
Mm-hmm.
Amita, you big sold me an interview in which she talked about body image and the quote I weigh movement.
Yes. It was a intriguing and empowering conversation. And frankly, it's not anything that, like, as a female, I didn't know. It's just that no one said it out loud and really, really made me feel like, yeah, I need to stop thinking this way, and I need to really speak up and be okay with who I am as I am, and think about what I'm worth outside of what I look like.
Yeah, and I actually really loved, one of my favorite parts of that interview is that it's a woman of color talking about this. I think we, you know, earlier this year or last year, you sold me an article by Reese Witherspoon, and I think, you know, I think a lot of women of all shades and ethnicities are speaking out about these important issues. I think there are more white actresses out there, so we're hearing more from them. So it was really cool to hear this woman who is of color talking about very personal issues, but issues that are personal for her, but are felt by so many people, women and some men. So it was cool. I really liked it. So I think, I mean, I definitely recommend it to everyone. And I think, you know, just to give some information about what we're talking about, she talks about measuring your worth not solely by your physical appearance and our obsession with our physical appearance, but by things like, who are you? Are you someone's friend? Are you someone's daughter? What do you enjoy doing? Like, all of those things, what do you contribute to society? All of those things are really your worth. And what she translates into, quote, I weigh. So I think, yeah, again, we all know that logically, but then it's so easy to walk past a mirror and say, ugh, you know what, five pounds less, and oh, I'm really happy with myself, right? Like, I've done that. I think so many of us have. I think it was a really good conversation. And she's young too. That's one thing that struck me, because she was talking about being a young woman in the 90s, and I was like, oh, I was already a grown ass adult in the 90s, but still, we're all experiencing that same thing.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's just, it's nice to see her, you know, she's gorgeous. And, you know, I don't, again, to not, you know, define her by what she looks like, but, you know, people would probably, from an outsider's perspective, think, well, she looks gorgeous and she looks like she's like this gorgeous model and is beautiful. But that's not the point, right? That is exactly, it's exactly the thing, is that it doesn't matter that she may look like she has a body and face of perfection. It's the fact that she's an activist, that she's intelligent, that she has, she's an incredible actress, that she does all these other things and has all these other qualities that define her. And for those of you that are interested in checking out this this movement, truly, it's I Weigh. And it's, if you go on Instagram, it's I_Weigh, W-E-I-G-H. And there's some really, like, I've been following it. There's some super inspiring posts, and any, like, people just contribute to it and get posted on it, and men, women, and they're, you know, all different shades. And it's just such an inspiring feed to just be a part of, and to really feel good about yourself. Because once you read other people say, you know, I'm bold, I'm brilliant, I'm fun, I'm candid, I'm a mom, I'm proud, I'm, you know, this is just one that I'm reading right now. Like, you're just like, yeah, I'm some of those things, and I'm other things too. And then that just makes you feel good.
One question I have, because I watched the first 20 minutes, which is what you big sold to me. And I definitely want to finish watching the interview, because it's a little bit longer than that, maybe twice the length. Mm-hmm. But one thing that I'm interested to hear, if she discusses it in the interview, or if she just discusses it on the feed or what have you, being concerned about your looks isn't 100% bad. I think the point that I like that she makes is that this has always been a problem, right? Especially for actors, but for all people, becoming too obsessed because of social media, especially, it's become even more of a problem. Mm-hmm. But I would say being concerned about your physical appearance isn't inherently bad. And I'm wondering if she ever talks about that. Like, she showed up to that interview, I think some light makeup, her hair looked great. Mm-hmm. Not as good as your hair looks right now, Amita. I'm just saying. Ladies and gentlemen, someone got a new hair did.
I did. Yeah. Okay. So, we digress.
But I think that's, like, it's not even like to argue with her, but I think that, like, that's one thing I thought about. It's like, oh no, actually, being concerned about your physical appearance, wanting to be healthy, wanting to look good, is not inherently bad. I think for what I'm interpreting it as is when it becomes obsessive, that's bad. But looking in the mirror and saying, hey, I love myself because there's so much else going on, but guess what? I really love myself even more 5 pounds lighter, or one more inch of bicep muscle or something like that to strive for, I don't think that's inherently bad.
No, I don't think that she's saying that's bad. I think that we're inundated with messages and public figures that promote them, that are like, this is the flat tummy product, and this is right. this corset you should wear for a curvy hourglass figure. Like, those type of messages that make you feel like the figure that you have isn't the right one.
Gotcha. Because I'm trying to get swole, Amita. I'm trying to add like 8 inches of muscle to my left bicep. So,
and you should. And thanks. I'm going to do the same thing. But I feel like... But I, you know, it's more of just also making sure that it's not the entire part of what you feel about yourself.
Right. Exactly.
And you don't feel less than because you don't have that hourglass figure or that flat stomach or that whatever else somebody's trying to tell you that you need to have.
Amen. Amen. Listen, I'm going to say something not even controversial. Gay men need that just as much as women. Then we can talk about this later, but it's a fact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, what do you give this Big Cell for a rating and review?
I'm giving this Big Cell 3.75 stars.
Thank you. I love it. Thanks.
For the message, for her delivery of said message, and for the interest I have in continuing to see what other messages she has for me in the future. So all that equals 3.75.
Thanks. I heart her so much. Jamila, let's meet in real life.
Yeah, never heard of her before because I don't know what my problem is, but I don't watch The Good Place.
Oh, you should.
So, which
so
is supposedly
good.
Great this season. It's like a whole, it's... like they've kind of rebooted it. It's a whole new thing. It's supposed to be great.
Yeah, in a little way, yeah. Yeah. They're it's always great. It's hilarious and clever and feel good and smart. It's a great show.
Love it. Okay. Well, I have a Big Cell for you. Not as heady, but I'm going to say as emotional.
Oh, my.
Yeah, this is not going to surprise you, this Big Cell, but as Amita knows, and as some of you may know, longtime listeners of the podcast, one of my favorite male vocalists is a gentleman with the wonderful alliterative name of Jose James. And I discovered him on a lark. Chris and I wanted to go out. I think I wanted to take him out for his birthday, and I was looking, where should I go? What should I do? Can we do something special? And I read that there is this singer named Jose James who had done a covers album of Billie Holiday songs, and he was playing at the Blue Note in New York City. Legendary jazz club, the Blue Note. So I went, and it has been a love affair with his voice. We're talking platonic. And... so I've followed him. He's released an album of original songs, I think last year or a year and a half ago. So now, Amita, he's done something super duper special. He's released a cover of Bill Withers songs. Sorry, an album of Bill Withers covers.
Oh my God.
Oh my gosh. It's such a good album. It's so interesting because he sounds a lot like Bill Withers. Like, so here's a man who did 10 Billie Holiday songs, and he wasn't doing a Billie Holiday impression, but like he conveyed Billie Holiday. Now he's doing Bill Withers, but his voice actually sounds a little bit like Bill Withers. So it's interesting. I think we could have a whole conversation on, like, should you do a cover if you sound so much like the artist? But I've been listening to this album nonstop all weekend. I want to big sell you the entire album, but why don't we just start with one song? And then if you like the song, then you should feel free to do whatever your little fingers lead you to do, swiping on Spotify.
Okay.
For me, there's so many. So Bill Withers, an amazing, 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 amazing songwriter and soul singer. He's still alive. I think he's 84. And songs like Lovely Day, Ain't No Sunshine When She's Gone.
So good.
Lean On Me.
That was in my head as soon as you said his name.
When You're Not Strong. All the songs I'm going to sing to Amita when I learn to sing. So, like, amazing songwriter. Like, he's like, it's the Great American Songbook by Bill Withers. So he does all these great songs. My favorite song on the album is a song I had not heard of before. But Jose James' interpretation of the song is so beautiful. It's called Hope She'll Be Better on the new Jose James album, Lean On Me. And I would love for you, Amita, at 2:59, to prepare yourself for this note that he hits. That starts at 3 minutes into the song and goes until 3:09 into the song. And the way he delivers that note honestly made me tear up the first time I heard it.
Wow.
I was like, oh, he misses her so much. So everyone take a breath and listen to Hope She'll Be Better on Jose James, Lean on Me, and then really just prepare yourself for a beautiful song, but for that note he hits at, it's like 2:59 to 3 minutes, and then it lasts for about 8 seconds.
Oh my gosh.
That's happening.
I can't wait. I cannot wait.
I can't wait for you to hear it.
Thank you so much for this big sell, Sean.
Ooh, you're welcome. You're welcome. Well, Amita, has it really come to this, the end of another amazing episode?
Yes, it has. Sorry.
Okay, but you know what? It doesn't have to be over.
Ripping off the Band-Aid. It's the end.
Ouch. Ooh. But you know what? I mean, it actually doesn't have to be over, because we can stay in touch with our listeners, and they can do the same by using social media. Twitter and Instagram at Pop Insiders is a great way for them to follow what we're up to. And I'm just going to say, we're going to be up to a little bit of stuff in October. Right. And then they could also visit our Facebook page, right? We've got one. Everyone has one. So just search for Inside Pop on Facebook. Also our official website. One of my favorite things to visit on the web, InsidePopPodcast.com.
Ooh, we've got a fit. Giggle fit. To finish what he's saying, go to InsidePopPodcast.com if you didn't hear Sean the first time.
Yes.
And then also head over to MaximumFun.org and listen to our podcast, and then explore all the wonderful podcasts dedicated to comedy and culture on that fun podcast network.
Until next time, this is Ripley, last survivor of the Nostromo, signing off.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.